It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Hour two of Cofield & Company. It is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. We're going to do some legal stuff today with Justin Watkins, but I think what you really like doing with us is talking football, and it is football season, and I was just down at Big Ten Football Media Day, so we can talk about the Big Ten. Middle of this hour, we are going to talk about the, I think, ridiculously established misnomers about the Big Ten and the SEC and just how much better they are top to bottom. And that's where the issue is. Top to bottom than every other conference. Because there is a coach who's calling bullcrap on all this, especially with the SEC. I love it. And I get a certain vibe down there with the Big Ten. And I'm looking around. I'm like, there's some good teams here. But there's a lot of flawed programs who don't have a quarterback. So we're going to get into that in the middle of the hour. But I wanted to start out with some serious stuff and some legal stuff. I don't know what's happening with the NFLPA. And this guy, Lloyd Howell, I know these things happen all the time where people are going to strip clubs and putting it on expense reports. But for this guy, that's a big problem. He was already conflicted. What the hell is happening here? What has happened to the NFLPA? Who has been paying attention?
That's what comes out to me out of all of this is like, how are these teams and these players, not the teams, but the players on the teams, what's their rep doing? Like, how are they unaware of the way that this person is spending, the way that this person is acting and behaving, both for himself and you know, to staff and everybody else that's a part of the PA? I don't know, but hopefully out of this, they come with some changes where, you know, there is some accountability for the NFLPA to the members themselves, to the players.
Yeah, this is something where I feel simultaneously bad for NFL players, but also feel like they should be roundly mocked. I feel like maybe a lot of times, I don't know, maybe there's a most of these players who kind of just view union duties, votings, whatever, as just like, all right, I just got to get this. I'll just vote for whoever tells me and then get out of here because everything's generally going to be the same. This is incredible. Yeah. Down to the point where he allegedly had them merge two parking spots, so had his Porsche wouldn't get dinged on the door and then made them call it 32 in honor of O.J. Simpson?
I know.
What?
I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it, but like I understand how the rank and file players
right.
say, hey, we got a player rep on the team. He tells us what's going on. We're gonna we vote for this person. We rely on that person to say, hey, heads up, pay attention now. We got a real one. This isn't just a, you know, vote along with whatever. We've got some really serious things we need to talk about. I get that. How somebody could run sort of a roughshod across the whole organization without anybody having an eye on them to say, hey, man, we need to talk about what he's doing and address it is, I think, worrisome. And hopefully they make some changes. Hopefully out of all this, they make some real changes where the player reps at least have maybe they got to have their own independent counsel that they hire out of their own pockets, a separate fund to just check in and ensure that the PA is doing what the PA is supposed to be doing. Now, the reality is the PA reps have a fiduciary duty to represent the best interest of the players. So any misuse of funds, any actions that are in conflict with that, absolutely a suit arises. They can sue and recover those monies, but it's you don't want to put yourself in that position where you have to spend money on attorney's fees, take years in order to get any sort of remedies or restitution for the ways that you've been wrong, especially in an industry where you know we don't have a monolithic group of players every year. It's always constantly changing. So I hope they get some sort of reprieve here, and I hope they make some changes to ensure that the PA is doing what they're supposed to be doing at all times.
So forgive me if you guys have already covered this, but I'm just curious because I haven't heard. So this whole thing where we've covered all of this, right, where they have this appeal hearing about the collusion. They decide not to appeal until after the report comes out. We're like, oh, no, we're going to appeal. Is that something where they sue for? Like, you're not doing us. Who do they sue? Who do they go after in that regard?
Yeah, so, I mean, you could go after the people who work for the Players Association, okay, right? Like, their job is literally to represent the players. Now, sometimes that means literal attorneys, and those attorneys have a fiduciary duty, which means, you know, every attorney has this for their client. I have to put their interest in front of mine. So if I'm put in a position where moving forward with an action benefits me personally or my firm, but would not benefit them, my client, I have to not do that. And so the Players Association absolutely has lawyers, and they also have staff members that work on grievances that are not technically lawyers, but they're going to have that same fiduciary obligation to the players. And so if they are not communicating with the player, if they are not providing the right sort of information, or worse yet, actually misleading the players because they have a conflict and they are putting themselves in a better position, you absolutely have a civil action right to recovery there.
You know, I love stories like this. Justin Watkins is with us. All these international games, you know, season ticket holders get cheated out of games.
Yeah.
What rights do we have? I'm not a season ticket holder, but, you know, in the case of the Chargers,
mm-hmm,
they're losing a home game in Brazil against the Chiefs. Now there's a class action suit. Got a shot?
Yes, if Ooh. What the allegations say are true, and I have no reason to believe that what's included in the complaint is untrue just because of the reputation of the lawyers who have filed it. But it is essentially this. The marketing to the season ticket holders talked about the schedule. It talked about we have these 9 home games, includes games against the Chiefs, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. So they included their marketing that they had the Chiefs game. The season ticket holders commit. Some payments are already being made or have been made. Maybe some in full, but you have your payment plans too. And then they move that game to Brazil, and they don't provide a refund for it. And if you cancel your season tickets, you forfeit all the payments you've made up until that point.
What about your PSL?
Well, if you have a PSL and you cancel your tickets, the PSL's gone, right? I mean, that's it.
But why don't we go back to when I bought the PSL?
Right.
My understanding is I get the Chiefs at home at SoFi every year.
Well, see, now I think that one's tougher.
For 20 years.
Yeah, because you don't know that.
Well, if you're basing your purchase on the number of international games, whenever you bought your PSL at SoFi, I have to go back and would they open up in 2020 or 21 or 19?
Yeah, I mean, they were playing
international. Like, I had a certain expectation, and now they're like, yeah, we're going to do 17 international games every year. Like, wait, they used to do 4.
Right.
Well, I paid $75,000 for a seat, and then my plan was, you know, this is the same thing with the Raiders. Like, my plan is Kansas City game is really valuable. I might not go to it, but I can recoup a lot of money because these lunatics from KC come in. What is this? What kind of investment was this? You lied to me.
But the PSL, remember, is a license to buy the tickets. It gives you the right to that seat for whatever events that are going on there. Now, there are different types of PSLs now. The original PSL was venue specific. Right? Like, any event that's occurring there, you have a real estate right to that seat, and you get to buy that ticket. It could be Taylor Swift, or it could be the football game. Now they've separated that all out, right? We see that here with the Legion, right? The PSL goes towards the Raiders. It gives you, like, priority towards, you know, sort of buying, but it doesn't give you UNLV. So there's like, layers to it now. But it does... I don't believe the PSL is ever going to represent to anybody that you're guaranteed anything beyond, like, the base minimum of games, right? Because you're not going to get charged for it if you don't. You get your PSL license, of course, that you pay up front, but over those 20 years. So I think recouping the PSL would be more difficult in that situation. But when you have direct evidence that you talk to us season ticket holders and you told us we're getting that game, and then you took it away from us, and the number of games, right? I went from 9 to 8. One of the games you advertised is gone, and I'm paying the same amount, that just can't be right.
How do I not get at least a refund?
Yeah, exactly. At least a refund. So that's why I say I think it's got a real chance, especially because California has very strict laws on this stuff.
So then when they ask, then what's the difference this year? They've played international games. Two of the last three games that they played internationally were Chargers home games. Right. What is different this time?
So according to the complaint, it's that you advertise to the season ticket holders this schedule.
Okay.
Chiefs game at home this year.
After you switched it after the payment.
So in the other instances, then they either didn't or nobody caught it to the point where they filed the suit.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
by the way, part of why this happens is because the NFL tries to keep this stuff under wraps for all their TV partners and have this big announcement blowout.
Yep.
So they're waiting on it. What about the fans?
Right.
What about the home fans? I don't care.
That's the thing, is like it would be really easy to just put in there, hey, if one of these games gets removed for international, then you cannot cancel. You know, there's no cancellation. The same cancellation policy applies. You can get a payment to be made. No games are guaranteed. Minimum number, because you can only go international once, right? I believe is the case. So you're guaranteed.
Well, Vikings are international twice.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say twice then. Let's say twice. But for every one of the games,
but only one of those is a home game. Sorry, so that's a cut you off. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So one home game may be taken away for international travel, and if it does, this amount will be credited towards your account. It's very easy. Yeah. That it's just very easy.
They can't write in, you're not getting a refund.
I don't think so.
Right.
I mean, certainly
they sell
not.
You nine games, yeah. And then they're like, sorry, it might not be nine. It could be eight. You're not getting your money back. Like, wait.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Not under California.
There's
got to
be some
law.
Consumer protection.
Right. California has the strongest consumer protections. That's why I just say, no way in California are you getting away with that. They're not going to allow you to sell something that says, eight, nine. you get whatever you'll take what we give you.
Would every team be looking at this now, or is this just because California's laws are so strict that, like, if you're Minnesota, to use the analogy again,
right,
do they not really care about adding language like that to theirs? Or should every team be looking at this?
Well, my question would be, is Minnesota refute? Like, it seems so obvious to me that you refund.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It seems just obvious.
It's bad business.
Right, exactly. So, are the Chargers just that out of whack that they're the only ones who aren't refunding? Or are the attorneys going, let's start at the place most favorable and work our way around? Hmm. It could be either or, but I have to believe that everybody else is like, of course we're refunding because it's so obvious. And it's good customer service.
Can I ask one more question? What's the statute of limitations? If I go back and find an advertisement for season tickets for those 2 years they went to Wembley and they were home games, and if they advertise the full season, can I then sue for my refund back in 2019?
2019. So breach of contract in a written document is 6 years.
Ooh. All right.
Right? So you got to go back and look.
You got to look at it. So you got 6 years. You're on it.
I'm sorry. And that was in Mexico. So either way, though, same thing. All right. Yeah.
All right. Let's open this one up because we're all bothered by the established rep in college football where it's like, hey, these conferences are the conferences. They're the good ones. They always win, which is absolutely not true. And there is a new hero in college football, and he works at SMU, Rhett Lashley. ACC, SMU, which, by the way, I love that he's using all the ACC data to back up his take. Like, they're just in the ACC. But that, let me tell you something. Out of Big Ten Media Days, they had all the different trophies, Heisman Trophy, this trophy, that trophy. Oh, they got USC, they got Oregon, they got Wyoming. Oh, they love that. Oh, it's all part of their history. Now, when I tell you what Rhett Lashley came out with, first of all, he wants a different setup for the 16-team playoff. And then he lobbed friggin' bombs all over the SEC, and that pansy Paul Feinbaum started whining earlier today. He's getting it too.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
So today, BBC, with Justin Watkins. Tomorrow, back at Big Ten Football Media Days. I have to admit, being around, I don't like the Big Ten. My school's in the Big Ten, but I'm not really part of the Big Ten. I don't want to be like those other schools. So it makes me a little uncomfortable. There's an arrogance there. And it's a different sort of arrogance, but it's still arrogance, like the SEC. And boy, Rhett Lashley, the football coach at SMU, they made the playoffs last year. Great job. You know, he's been hearing about this 4+4+2+2+1+3. What that means is four auto bids into a 16-team tournament for the Big Ten and the SEC. Oh, the ACC can have two, Big 12 can have two, and then there'll be three at-large and one for a group of five. And he's like, what? Like, no, it should be a 4+4+4. We should be one of the four. And he's basing that on ACC over the course of history has won a lot of national titles, no less than the Big Ten. And the SEC, as he pointed out, is very limited. It's only a group of schools, which is always what we said. The bottom of the SEC constantly saying, you know, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, oh, SEC, Vandy.
Yeah.
Like, you guys don't even win.
Right.
They win at a good level, but not national championship level. I love this freaking attack.
Me too.
I don't like a 4+4+4.
No, you know, that's ridiculous. Me either.
But I understand why he's doing it. Hey, if we're going to be absurd,
yeah,
then let's be absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the argument he made against the SEC works just as well against the ACC, which is, you know, over the course of the last 25 years, there's been only six different champions. Yeah. So, yeah, great conference. You got 18 teams. Only six of them matter. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the argument. That's the same argument for the ACC too. But to his point, like, so
we're
then
there.
Why, so we're right there too. So why separate us, you know? So I like that the conferences are coming out swinging. Selfishly, I like it as well because I think there is going to be, as an Oregon State fan, I think there's going to be a day of reckoning here in the next calendar year from now of whether or not the Pac-12 is an autonomous conference or not. And the more infighting that happens between the ACC, Big 12, and the SEC and Big 10, the more they're playing against each other, mm-hmm. the more likely the Pac-12 is to have another seat at the table, so it becomes 3-2 instead of 2-on-2 in that fight. You know, and because of the implementation of House and what's going on, the Pac-12 has kind of like a half seat at the table. They have to be there for the new rules. They have to be there for the implementation of it all. They have to be there for the governance of it all because they are one of the parties to the suit. The question just becomes, they are not there for CFP, and are they going to be there?
Well, let's talk about the leaders, right?
Yeah.
So I think... Well, I love that an ACC coach said it, but I don't think Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, has been bold enough on this front. I think Yormark gets it. Those two should be linking together and going, you know what? Let's pal up with the Pac-12, to your point.
Yes.
Then it is 3-2. I don't know what world, especially the ACC commissioner, lives in where he's like, oh, we're going to be treated fairly. Like, yeah. The second they want, when they want to take their ball, they're going to rip the top off your conference and potentially ruin it. So right. You're at risk. Fight with the partner you have and potentially another partner, and selfishly being here in Vegas, and, you know, as a group of five, you guys could be, I say you guys, Oregon State, Pac-12, could be, you know, part of a group of six. Like, everyone else needs to be fighting against this arrogance and this kind of, like, loose threat that, hey, we're going to – I mean, I sat there and listened to Tony Petitti, like, you know, I forget how he put it, but it was like, basically said outright, he's like, yeah, we make all the decisions, Big Ten and SEC. And I was mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm still not cool with that either.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, he did. He literally said that.
No, he said it.
He said it.
I was, yes. And I was kind of like, I know that's reality, but I was like, okay.
But Yormack was like, that's not how I read it. You know? And so, I mean, we've been saying this for a little bit here. I don't think that if they were to take their ball and run, that they're in a better position than the next 60. I think there's a group of 60 after that that could make a real tournament. You know, have real conferences, have just the, you know, you can make real regional conferences, 4 or 5 or 6 maybe. But I think you got to consolidate a little bit. Let's say 6. And then, boom, conference champions all meet in a playoff. The highest ranked one's got to buy. Okay. Or 8 and get 2 at large. Whatever. And have a real tournament. And then watch as the Big Ten and SEC go and just play amongst themselves. And there's always a debate. Could this other team have beat them? Can this top 60 team over here have beat them? And they have to live with this asterisk, you know, national championship from their special little division. I don't think they want that. And I think, you know, these other conferences need to stand up to them and say, hey, man, okay, you want to go do that? Go do that. But I think they also got to be careful, right? Obviously, there is a chance that the top gets ripped off of both of those conferences and the bottom isn't strong.
I think you're giving them too much credit for caring about actual football, though.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't think they would care at all about the perception of their champion not being real. I think you're getting a taste of this now. they're more than fine with getting the four autos. Plus, they know the at-larges are mostly going to probably come from those two conferences if this is set up. The day our semifinal is going to be made up of a vast majority of Big Ten SEC SEC teams. I think they're perfectly fine if they were to split off and become just another, you know, we'll call it like a minor NFL or whatever it is.
Yeah, with just 40 teams. I mean, maybe that's the case. I feel like we are trending towards a space in which the fan, the student, is going to rebel. I mean, I sent you a story about Minnesota. Just tacked on. Boom. $500 per student athletic fee to pay for the revenue share. Yeah. So the schools aren't going to take any less. The NCAA isn't going to take any less. They're just passing it through right to their consumer, right to their student to pay directly, whether they go or not, whether they're attending or not. And at some point, it's going to undercut. Now, all the leaders in all these good institutions all claim that their number one marketing front is athletics. Probably so. Even Stanford says, hey, when our athletics is doing good, our school is doing good. I think that we are bumping up against the saturation point of that happening, where they're going to start losing out on viable students who are great at what they do, who would rather go to a school that doesn't have all this nonsense going on.
Okay, so let's get to some of the SEC mouthpieces, because Red Lashley took a shot at the SEC and basically said, to your point, what was his point? You relayed it. But there's been, there's like five or six powers in the SEC. The rest of the conference is kind of dragged along, and they play good football and they produce NFL players, but they're not this high and mighty, teams that are making runs to national championships. So how did Finebaum react?
On Get Up this morning, quote, "Do you know what happened at SMU? They shut the program down." Well, he's making fun of the SEC for winning national championships all over the place. SMU is the best program in the history of college football. Rhett Lashley has the nerve to get up there and throw stones. By the way, he played at Arkansas. That should have nothing to do with it. That was one of the most comically embarrassing rants I have heard, and I am glad the audio wasn't clear when they played it on Get Up, because I would have come right through that screen.
Yeah. You wouldn't have done anything.
Right.
Because no one ever challenges you. I'll challenge him on this. SMU is not the most corrupt program in history.
100%.
They got caught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll also say SEC programs have been caught. They weren't penalized.
Yeah.
SMU was an easy target because it was kind of an outsider. And all the other Texas schools were like, hey, what the F is going on here? Go get SMU. SMU was also, they were out of control from an arrogance standpoint. But there's no doubt in my mind there's five or six SEC programs that over the course of the last 70 years of big-time football have cheated more than SMU did, even at its height. So who are you to lob this defamatory comment? Lashley needs to sue Finebaum. don't do that, because we're protected.
Yeah, there's no
outrageous. And, listen, I understand it's a bit.
Yeah.
But I'll bite.
Yeah.
Let's go, tough guy.
Yeah.
It's
a joke.
In the art of debate, it's like the weakest response. Oh, yeah? Well, remember that time nearly 40 years ago where that program got in trouble? Like, that's
what does Rhett Lashley have to do with that?
What does that have to do with anything we're talking about at this point right now? You're not rebutting anything that I'm saying, which is it matters just to six schools. That's it. And then you have, and you've talked about this all the time, which goes back to something that we've all to understand. If you go to Arkansas, why the SEC? SEC? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Well, and to your point, he wasn't even talking about SMU. He was talking about conference to conference. He was comparing conferences. He wasn't comparing his team to any one team in the SEC. And, I mean, hey, the saying, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, it was only ever spoken about one conference in college football, and it was the SEC. Mm-hmm. So like, that be your you're going to lead with your chin with that argument that of corruptness? I mean, the SEC is in the place it is today because it was willing to do and break all the rules in order to get there. The results justified the means, and that's all that mattered. And so, I don't know. I mean, college football has always been my favorite sport to watch as a fan, and it is not becoming that. I'm just using my own turn towards this particular sport as an eye towards, I have to believe I'm not the only one, and that there's a big part of the public that's like, Dude.
Here's the thing. There's no reason to lose hope because and John and I argued about this like 5 or 6 years ago.
I've been right.
I'm telling you, it's going to get more balanced. It is. It is. Trust me. There's more players.
You're going to be saying that for like 20 years.
There's more. Well, we've seen all these new entrants. Now the tournament got expanded, but we've seen all these new entrants.
Sure.
The gap is closing.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens this year.
Won the national championship last year?
Yeah. Ohio State. Oh, but, okay. Well, a couple of years ago, it was only the SEC that was winning championships. At least the Big Ten program, some of the top ones have caught
up
a little bit.
Right, the little guy, Ohio State, finally caught up.
But you watch with quarterbacks spread all over the country. I'm telling you, dude, there's a lot of programs out there that don't have quarterback depth.
You've said this for 5 years.
Right, and I do think it's getting more balanced. The other thing that we fail on is we don't break down the season before and see how many close games there were. Like, within a winning record, the games are closer. There are more close calls. We just saw Alabama fall apart last year and miss out because a little guy like Diego Pavia and Vandy made advancements. We got to take a timeout. You can certainly fire back on this one. Listen, I'm glass overflowing, man. I'm hopeful.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
JVT and I will continue on that parody thing. Well, I want to get to one more important thing. There was a note out earlier this week about Memphis making a pitch to the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Some kind of $200 million thing. As I read it, it seemed a little corny what they were offering. But you tell me, what was your impression of, you know, the Big 12 rejecting Memphis?
Well, I mean, nobody has refuted the story. So I think that's an important point. I mean, we're now 4 or 5 days away from the story coming out, and nobody from Memphis, nobody from the Big 12, nobody from the American now has said that that wasn't true. And the terms as reported were basically along these lines. We can bring in sponsors who have committed to be a part of the conference if you accept us. And they would bring about $200 million in sponsorship. So it wasn't like they were cutting a check exactly. Mm-hmm. They were going to bring sponsors with them that was going to increase everybody's take home a couple million dollars. Then they were going to forego any payments for 5 years of revenue share. And here's the crazy part. After those 5 years, the Big 12 could just kick them out and there would be no exit fee if they didn't want to keep them. So, I mean, as far as a pitch to get into a conference, that's about as much as you could give. Yeah. You don't have to pay me. I'm going to bring in added sponsors. I'm going to bring in revenue for everybody else, not us. And if you don't like it, at any point, you can kick us out and you don't pay us any penalties.
It's a little desperate.
It's super desperate. And they're not a bad program. That's the thing. They're not a bad program. It's not like this pitch was coming from, I'm going to say, Sacramento State. I mean, Sacramento State's doing all the right things they can do in the position they're in. So I'm not criticizing them, but I'm saying it's not like Sacramento State's a program like that is trying to make a FCS to FBS jump and get into a Power Four. This is a team that's right there on the precipice as far as program recognition. And the fact that the Big 12 said no told me they're not doing anything. There's no expansion until and unless the ACC starts to fall apart, which says, I think we might be done with the P4 realignment until 2030.
Yeah. Well, we were told the other day by Nicole Auerbach, who's pretty good on this stuff, NBC Sports and SiriusXM. Yeah, 2030, 2031 is probably the next movement, if there's any movement.
Well, but that's where, if this stuff's going to happen, this is where divisions switch. This is where people opt out of the NCAA. This is where, you know, all those Olympic sports become club programs and not truly sanctioned event. Like, this is where 2031 is when everything.
So you got 5 years. Yep. Is that actually, in a way, it's a positive for schools that are outside of the Power Four efforting to get into whatever the highest club is going to be? You got 5 years. You really got like three, but you have to get your act together. Now's the time. Get it done.
Yeah, and you know, I'm again talk from a Pac-12 centric spot. From the Pac-12, you got to get moving, right? Like you should be on the phone with Memphis and Tulane and USF, and then you probably have to throw in UTSA and say, hey, we got to be if you guys come along. And you commit to this spending floor, guaranteed investment, and on each specific school basis on their, you know, infrastructure, we can compete with the Big 12. I think that's true. I mean, the bottom of the Big 12 is particularly garbage. I mean, you got to remember, they were just on the precipice of losing themselves as a conference, and they added Cincy and UCF. They've got some.
Houston hasn't been impressive so far.
I mean, nobody even goes to Houston. To the games. Their games are worse than a San Jose State game. I mean, there's 3,000 students in, or 3,000 fans in that game. You know, so there's some poor programs at the bottom of the Big 12. And so if you get those programs over, you get the conference up to 12, 13, 14 teams, all who are guaranteed to spend, you put yourself in a position by 2030. But if you stick at 8, I don't know.
Next couple of weeks, we got to mark down time for a conversation about my guy, Retzlaff.
Yes.
I usually say screw Tulane, but I kind of have to root for him now. I like that they went out and they got Retzlaff.
Julaine?
Yeah, I've heard it. Spelled a little differently, right?
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
So we'll do some college football futures, some NFL futures in a couple minutes with Brian Edwards. We don't have to go round and round on the future of college football. We can break this down. John. Well, I don't think either one of us is wrong, because I'm talking about a long-haul argument here about more teams being in the mix for a national championship. But we haven't seen the full effect of the transfer portal taking players away. No, I do believe that with more of the mid-level programs in all of these conferences, or high-level programs from a group of five, that the more people you put on the dance floor, the more of the gauntlet you put top programs through, they're going to lose some of these games. And I'm not looking at last year's playoff as some sample that's worth talking about. But what I wanted to build off of is, as an example, and maybe this is something we can bet on, the Big Ten. The Big Ten pecking order by the odds has Ohio State a slight favorite over Penn State, depending on which book you're at.
Yeah.
And then Oregon, and then Michigan, followed by Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, USC, Indiana, and Washington. And I think Penn State's going to be really good. I think Ohio State or Oregon will have an odd season for them, which still means they might go 9-3. But I think they are going to lose some games along the way, because I don't trust both of their quarterback situations to be locked up by the beginning of the season. I think Michigan is completely fascinating with maybe a freshman quarterback or maybe one of their veterans. Like, I like Mikey Keene, and I would turn to him if Bryce Underwood can't play early. And then there's the rest of that mix in the Big Ten. Like, I don't trust Bielema to continue the momentum. I think Illinois will take a little step back. And then from there, maybe Nebraska does have the guy, at quarterback. And Patrick, I know I'm Mahomes debasing Jr. a lot on quarterback. Right. Say it again.
Patrick Mahomes Jr., Dylan Mayola.
Yeah. He played. This is another thing we make a mistake with. And I heard, I've continued to hear a lot of it with Nico Yami Lieva, who's now at UCLA. Like, he was a redshirt freshman. And people were like, he sucked. Like, redshirt freshman.
Mm-hmm.
Relax. It's not easy when you're a young guy. So I think that is going to bring some unpredictability to the Big Ten. I find USC completely fascinating, because, you know, right now the starter is
Jaden Mayava.
If he doesn't work out, then they have a true freshman who was fourth-ranked quarterback recruit in the country.
Which I don't know if Jaden's going to work out, but
that's, I don't know if he is. Yeah. But so is that kid a savior? Or they have to turn to him, and it's a freaking disaster. So Indiana has a new quarterback in. Was that a one-year wonder for Cignetti? Right. I don't know. I think Washington will bounce back. My whole point is, I look at the Big Ten as an example, and I don't know that the top teams are guaranteed, and I can't really figure out from, I'll say even 4 to like 12, where that mix is
going to
be.
Right, but I don't understand what you're arguing here.
Well, I'm not going back. I'm not going back to the national championship.
I'm saying this. I don't understand what you're arguing here. Like, yes, okay, like a bunch of teams that are kind of similar to one another from 4 on in the Big Ten are very similar to one another.
Right.
If like, I will put a bullet point here. If I say to you, and this is what I believe, 1 and 2 in a particular order will be Penn State and Ohio State. That is the only thing I believe about the Big Ten. I think you're right about Oregon.
Okay.
I think you're right about Michigan. I think any one of these other teams can finish 3 or 4. I shouldn't say any one of these.
You give me the rest of the league to finish 1 or 2.
Outside of Oregon. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Come on.
Actually, no. I'll give it a sure. Yeah. I'll stick to my belief that Oregon's not going to be that good. Because your whole point, though, I mean, but pushback is your whole point is that the powers won't be there, but now you want one of the powers. Like, my whole thing is.
No, I don't. You know what? I'll take the bet. You can have Penn State, Oregon, and Ohio State will finish one or two.
Sure.
Which I probably am a gigantic dog on.
Yeah.
But I'll take it.
But my whole point is
that someone will creep up to top two.
Like, even what you're arguing, it's like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, Illinois could potentially finish third in the Big Ten. What does that do for the state of college football?
Like, Illinois was in the fourth quarter in the game with Penn State. Penn State went on to have a very good season. But that's what I'm saying is, like, incrementally, there's been a closing gap. We look at the final record and we don't look at games along the way.
Sure.
I think there are teams that are going to lose some of these games moving forward.
Right. But I'd also argue to your own statement in that same game that you're referring to, James Franklin decided to kick a field goal on a fourth and goal from like the inch yard line.
But that's part of it.
No, of course it is. But what I'm saying is, like, again, to your point, I will use the point of you're saying is look at the nuance of these games, right? Don't just look at the record. Look at the nuance of these games. Yeah, look at the nuance of a game like that. Penn State was in a close game largely of their own decision making, probably could have blown that game open. Now, the other rebuttal will be, well, that's James Franklin. But either way.
That's also, in a lot of ways, that's the Big Ten.
Right.
I think the Big Ten has to get out of that mold of trying to survive in games.
Either way, and I'm not, because I like to push back on Adam like this, which is because he'll just invoke the betting market like it's his pure and holy thing that's always correct, which it's not. I would point to the fact that a vast majority of the time when these teams we're talking about, the Illinois, Nebraskas, I'll throw your team in there, Rutgers of the world, that have some good returning personnel, that might have more talent. Rutgers got some pretty good pass rushers in the transfer portal, right? Like, they've added some pretty good guys. They got Ethan Calig-Manis coming back, who can be a pretty decent guy if he ups that completion percentage and cuts down on putting the ball in danger. When they play Ohio State on a neutral, I'd bank more on Ohio State winning by double digits comfortably than I would Rutgers being able to win that game outright.
Right. Who do you think is going to make a big jump up? Because Indiana did it last year, and Illinois was on the edge of it. Illinois won 10 games, and they went 6-3 in conference. So who can make a big jump up?
I like Nebraska. I think the having Holgorsen – so for people who don't remember, Dana Holgorsen actually came in the middle of the year to start helping with that offense. Now you get the end of that season, plus this entire offseason to implement Holgorsen's offense here, hopefully getting a little bit more explosive. Their offensive line's very good, and I'm with you. We shouldn't throw the bathwater out with some of these young quarterbacks. Raiola started as a true freshman. That's a lot to handle at a big level and a big step up, no matter what level of high school football you're playing. So having another year like that with a really talented guy, Matt Rhule does have a good track record of making his teams better, as I keep calling it the rule of three, right? Temple, Baylor, third years, they had won double-digit games, each of his stops there. I think that there is something there with Nebraska making a run. The other thing that helps Nebraska, because what you're talking about here is a jump in the standings, essentially, they finally avoid Ohio State. Their schedule is very favorable for them. That, to me, is a team that, you know, we always talk about in football, or actually basketball is a better example, regular season teams. I think Nebraska could be a good regular season team. Now, power rating-wise, when they get onto the field with those big boys like Ohio State, Penn State, I believe they do have to make the trip to go play Penn State near the end of the year. They're probably going to get smoked, but every other game, there is a reality, if you look at their schedule, that they're favored in every game but one, maybe two.
So my argument that it's getting more balanced should also have me supporting the 4+4 16-team model where the SEC gets four autos, the Big Ten gets four autos, because if they do, then they're going to go to a 1-6 tournament, a play-in tournament, 3-6-4-5. Mm-hmm. And I saw some initial reaction to that. Like, I like Dan Wolkin. He writes for USA Today, but he can be a little bit of a hot taker. And his reaction to the, you know, a 5-6 having a chance to get in, it's like, well, who wants to see Iowa and Illinois in? Like, isn't that why we play?
Of course.
Like, can we actually see the results before we just write things off, or even off of last year's results? Like, those teams could have been competitive with some other teams that were in the field.
Well, to your point,
I just hate going into season just like, this is the way it's going to be. No one's interested in other teams. Well, yeah, the fans in those conferences are interested. The fans in those markets are interested. You got to have some hope.
That's it right there. You know, this whole premise of, like, why? Like, who wants to see them? They're fan bases. Honestly, like, who wants to see the Longwood Lancers make it to the NCAA tournament? They're not going to do anything.
Well, who wanted to see Indiana before the season last year, and they turned out to be a pretty freaking dangerous team.
But my whole point to you, like, and backing up what you're saying is, yeah, the fan base in the alumni group of the Longwood Lancers wants to see them make the NCAA tournament.
Why are we doing this?
They want to travel. Like, that should be the whole point. Somewhere along the way, we lose the whole, hey, this is still college athletics. Like the same people that will invoke the missing pomp and circumstance and sis boom bah of like, what happened to college football? We'll also make that same statement like, who wants to see Rutgers? Isn't that the point? For the fight songs and the fan bases and all these teams to feel like, hey, we can play on any given day. It's what made Indiana so cool. They got smoked by Notre Dame, but guess what? That fan base finally had something. Made it to a college football playoff.
More updates in the NFL from Dallas. And, man, there's some stuff brewing in Miami, and I like it. Come on, let's go, Mike McDaniel. Get control.